finally loses in the Big Ten tournament, 70-75 to Purdue. And Rod, this one was close until about maybe the halfway through the first half, and then Purdue started to pull away a little bit. Winds up 7 points up at halftime, and just can't really pull it together. What happened?
Well, I don't know. I think it was a lot more than that. I'm not unhappy with this result, with the possible exception of what happened to Tyson Walker, which we can get into. I said yesterday in the aftermath of the Wisconsin win that to me the thing that mattered most was Michigan State sustaining what they did against Wisconsin. And what I mean by that is defense, effort, energy, those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that they could do those things and still potentially lose to Purdue. So I wasn't, as hung up on gotta win as those other things. And I think by and large we got that.
Good.
I think what you look at in this game, particularly in the first half, but not entirely that, or really a lot of it maintained for the bulk of the game. Michigan State to me looked like a team missing jumpers because their legs weren't there.
Mm.
Third game in 3 days. When you miss short consistently, it's usually a sign of that. And I saw a lot of Michigan State missing short. Now, they hit some late to kind of keep the game respectable. But I think that was a large part of the loss, was that. And then, obviously, Purdue has Jaden Ivey.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a huge factor, but in terms of what I saw from Michigan State, I that was a game where I felt it was mostly positive.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that they lose, I thought Purdue had to play well. Now that I can and to beat them, but Michigan State really competed after that abysmal first half, where they only scored 20 points, a season low. They scored 50 in the second, which has got to be one of their better scoring halves of the year. So, weird game in that respect. But, again, for the most part, a good effort and a really, really, really good game. Probably his best of the year out of A.J. Hogarth.
Mm-hmm.
Given the circumstances, he had to play almost the whole game. He led MSU in scoring. He had 10 assists, 0 turnovers. 2 steals.
10 assists only. That might be a high for him.
It's got to be up there. I don't know if he's hit double digits in any other game this year. But, again, some of that was fueled by the fact that he had to play the minutes. He played 34 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, I thought A.J. Hogarth played himself a great game. And he led them, I thought, in terms of showing that fight,
mm-hmm.
that tenacity. And it's a shame they weren't able to be rewarded with a win for it, because I think the way they played, they did not deserve to lose. Let's put it that way. They just got beat by a team that's a little better than they are.
Yeah.
So
how concerned are we about this Tyson Walker?
Well, very, because he didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
And Izzo came off in the post game and said that, it's not broken or anything. But they don't know. They don't know how long, and they think it could be a while. Who knows what that means? Mm-hmm. I think you look at it, and the positive signs are he wasn't in a boot. But then again, I don't know what the situation is like for that in terms of playing in the Big Ten tournament. I would think that the capability to do those types of things is there.
Uh-huh.
At a facility like that, but I don't know that for sure. I don't know if it's any different than it is at a Big Ten game or even at another school in the conference, playing on the road. I don't know. He was moving around. The problem was that, they reinserted him briefly, like one or two possessions, and after he initially got hurt. So he did come back. And then they took him out right away, and I suspected at the moment it happened, and sure enough, it was confirmed later, that he couldn't move laterally. There was a play where I think he was trying to guard, it was either Hunter or Thompson, one of their smaller guards, and he tried to move laterally with him, and he ended up getting called for a foul.
Uh-huh.
But you saw him immediately turn to the bench, and they got him out of there. So it's lateral movement that was the issue. Mm-hmm. If they don't have him, that's a big, big deal. But, big but here, we are going into NCAA tournament time. And the reason I think that's significant is, depending upon the draw, it is quite possible, and we've seen it many, many times over the years, that Michigan State will be facing a team that has not seen their transition game, mm-hmm. anything like it. And that is A.J. Hogard's strength.
Yeah.
So they are in a slightly better position for this than if you were asking them to withstand a couple weeks without Walker in the middle of Big Ten play.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my takeaway. But I think it's way too early to conclude anything about anything in regard to Walker.
Okay.
The only thing you could say is he wasn't able to come back in the second half. So obviously it was serious enough that they're treating it seriously. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, nobody knows. So I suspect we'll start to find more out, you know, as we get into next week, as we get into Monday, Tuesday, we'll know more. But I'm certainly not ready to declare that he can't play,
mm-hmm.
but we don't know if he can. And then again, as we saw with Johnny Davis last night, even if he can play, you don't know. I would imagine at a minimum we're talking about him missing practice time. So you don't know what that might do to his sharpness. You know,
yeah.
even if he can play, but he hasn't been able to practice much. What does that do? Who knows? A lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we do have some time, so that's the one positive, I suppose.
Right. at a minimum, they've got till Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the thing. I don't think he would have played tomorrow even if MSU had won. But I'm guessing at that. But I'm making that assumption.
Okay.
But yeah, they've got several days. And hopefully that's enough. If it's like a grade one sprain, from what I understand, you know, that's possible with therapy and treatment that maybe they can get him back,
mm-hmm.
And able to play.
All right. So Gabe Brown, 31 minutes, 16 points, 4 rebounds and assist, 3 for 6 from 3, hit a free throw, only 1 turnover.
You know, not a bad game. I mean, he hit a couple shots late to kind of get his point total inflated.
Uh-huh.
But I thought he played okay. I mean, he was once again tasked with guarding Sasha Stefanovic, and Stefanovic only went 2 for 5. He hit a couple threes, 2 for 5. All the shots were threes. And Gabe had a lot to do with that. So I think Gabe played pretty well defensively in this mm-hmm. one. And again, the 16 points, you know, 3 for 6 from 3, not bad.
And then Christie, 9 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 for 10 from the floor, 2 for 6 for 3. 3 turnovers.
Yeah, three turnovers. It was not an easy day for Max Christie. He had a very difficult defensive assignment for the second game in a row. You know, he saw a lot of
Ivy.
Jaden Ivy. Not exclusively. Hogard saw him a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Purdue will test you in that way. And I thought this was a game that if I had to identify the single biggest difference between Max Christie and guys like Ivy and Davis and even Keegan Murray, who's a little taller, but still, those three guys are all sophomores and all hugely impactful players this year. That none of them play exactly like each other, but I think the biggest difference right now is strength.
Mm.
Man, and it shows up in games like this. You know, Jaden Ivey, people marvel at his burst athletically, and rightly so, because it's incredibly impressive. But he's strong, and that's a big part of his success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a play in the first half where there was kind of a loose ball situation where there were a couple Michigan State guys sort of sandwiching Ivy. And he got between them, just like he was shot out of a cannon, got to the ball, and then ended up scoring at the other end. What made that play, yeah, it was athletic burst, but it was also strength. you see it show up at times with Max. Not all the time, but enough where it's clear to me if he was just a little bit stronger, you would see more success here. He'd be much better finishing, for example, around the rim. He really struggles in that area. Rebounding. At times, even though he had six, at times he struggles in traffic, you know, to secure rebounds because he's maybe just not strong enough. Now, he made real progress from his high school period to now. He made real progress over the last several months since he's been at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. But there's another level I think he's got to get to, and I think that will be a difference maker, and it's why, assuming he's able to do that, I would put him, depending upon whether Branham elects to go pro from Ohio State, I would say, other than Branham, he would be my number one candidate in the Big Ten for a guy to take a quantum leap the way that these three guys that everybody's talked about have taken from their freshman to their sophomore years. Max, and I don't know that he'll quite get to the level those guys were at, but he'd be my pick to be that kind of guy, relatively speaking, next year, assuming he makes progress in terms of strength. I think strength and also tiredness. He was a prime example of a guy who looked like he didn't quite have his legs underneath him. Mm. A lot of those missed shots were short. Now, he hit a couple late, again, to make the stat line look better. But for a lot of that game, Max was really struggling shooting the ball.
Yeah.
Really struggling.
And then Bingham, 23 minutes, 9 points, 6 rebounds, 4 for 11 from the floor. He hit a 3, 3 blocks, a steal.
You know, obviously it wasn't the numbers that he put up against Wisconsin, but I liked the way Markey played. I really did. I thought he battled. I thought he competed in there. He had his moments where he got the better of them. They, of course, had their moments with those two centers they're going to where they got the better of him. But I thought he really – he showed out well today. I'm not down on his performance, even though, you know, the shooting numbers aren't great. He didn't have quite the same level of statistical impact that he had against Wisconsin. I think it was still a pretty good day for him.
Mm-hmm. And then Joey, 21 minutes, no points, 4 rebounds, and assist.
Tough day for him. Never really managed to get on track. And again, he was another one of these guys. Now, his shots didn't look short to me. He just had some tough luck. Had good looks. They didn't hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, he competed. I just think at times, you know, he had problems with the Gillis kid. Who's a tough cover.
Mm-hmm.
Gillis hit a couple threes on him. You know, we'll get to it in a little more detail later, but I didn't think Joey was consistently great on the time and the occasions that Michigan State opted to double, which was more than I thought we'd see, and I'll get to that in a minute in more detail. But, you know, the effort level was not lacking. I just think, again, it just wasn't his day.
Yeah. All right, he gets a pass on this one. And Malik Hall, 22 minutes, 9 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 for 5 from the floor, 3 steals.
The disappointing thing about Malik is the disappointing thing that we've had to say a few times this year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, why didn't he get engaged earlier? And I don't know what the answer is to that with him. I really don't. It's not the starting, coming off the bench thing, because when they inserted him in the starting lineup, he wasn't playing well.
Mm-hmm.
He had moments in this game. He had a spin move, which was, again, I've said it a few times this year, pro move. Absolutely a pro move. And he had a stretch in the second half. He might have done all his scoring in the second half, where he was really tough for them to deal with. But just not – you needed just a little bit more from him, especially early on, and they didn't get it.
Yeah. And then Akins, 4 points, 3 rebounds, 2 for 4 from the floor.
It's the same story with Jaden Akins. I mean, you love his compete level. His energy. He had a tough assignment, man. It's one thing guarding Davis. Davis is a really tough cover, too. But I think in terms of the athletic package there's no tougher cover than Jaden Ivey. Yeah. You saw a difference. I mean, mm-hmm. There is a difference between those guys. You know, Jaden Ivey doesn't have the stats that Davis does, but it's because he plays on a team that doesn't need him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And runs runs a lot of other stuff, runs the ball through the post a lot more. You know, they just do a lot more. But put Jaden Ivey on Wisconsin, and I'm betting he'd put up similar numbers or maybe even better. And Jaden Akins guarded very, very well today, but sometimes it doesn't matter mm-hmm. against that guy. So I liked the way Jaden played. I thought offensively he was confident, you know, hit a couple shots. I liked this game. No change. Okay.
And then Marble, 9 minutes, 4 points, 2 rebounds, 2 for 5 from the floor.
Yeah. Foul play. Obviously, he fouled out one of two MSU players who fouled out, and then Bingham had 4. So they had a lot of foul trouble inside. Again, not a huge surprise playing that team. But Julius, you know, he's been so automatic that every time you see him take a shot, you expect it to fall.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed a couple. He missed a right-handed jump hook, and then he missed like a 18-foot jumper that he just hasn't been missing those shots lately. So that stuff came in the first half when the offense was just struggling to hit anything.
Mm.
But it was just hard for him. He only played 9 minutes. It was hard for him to get anything going because of foul trouble, really.
Yeah. And then Mahdi had 5 minutes, had the one dunk. What did you see out of him today?
I thought he played well.
Mm.
You know, they tempted fate there. They went with a lineup with Mahdi and AJ on the floor together down the stretch of the first half to close it. And I said recently, I think it might have been the Maryland game.
Yeah, I think it was last game.
That's not a lineup I want to see together. Mm-hmm. But they really didn't have a choice today.
Right.
Because of foul trouble, they needed Mahdi to play that turn. And they didn't have another option at the point at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to go with it. And they actually shaved 4 points off the lead. So made me look bad in the process. But I thought Mahdi had a really good defensive play in that stretch.
Yeah.
As you say, he got the one bucket, had a rebound. So I thought he was energetic, which he normally is, but it's too often unfocused energy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of spastic.
Chaotic,
chaotic, that's a better word. And you just don't know what whether it's going to be positive or negative. But today it was all positive, channeled properly. So that was good to see.
And then Pierre gets in there for 2 minutes.
Yeah, didn't have a chance to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back because we need to talk about A.J. Hogard.
Yeah, 17 points, 4 rebounds, 10 assists, 8 for 17, 2 steals.
Yeah, and 0 turnovers.
Yeah.
That was just a great, great effort, and I would say that was the best performance from him this year because, in my view, it was the one where he was most under control. You know, AJ's been very successful this year at times, we know, passing ahead in transition, or certainly driving to the rim and scoring, which he did some of today. But I don't think I've ever seen him be that patient the way he was in the second half, where he would get himself into the lane, get a defender on his back. You know, like there's a kid at Penn State, Pickett, is really, I don't know how many of our listeners have seen him play much. He's really, really good at that. Getting into the lane and getting a defender on his back and just kind of patiently waiting for the opportunity either to take a shot or to hit someone at the rim. And AJ did a lot of that today. I just thought he was really, really poised. What was interesting is he walked the line between being very poised and under control and yet still being aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a hard thing for guys to do. And he's failed walking that line a lot this year. You know, there have been a lot of times where he tries to do too much, right? That didn't happen today. I thought he was really, really good in terms of his judgment and playing the game at a pace that was comfortable for him and allowed him to be productive. So I was really, really impressed with his game, and you know, to show that in this kind of game, I think it does suggest that there's further room for growth with him, mm-hmm. and that he even has probably leadership potential, which I would not have said those things a year ago this time. No way.
Mm-hmm.
But he has certainly blown way past what I thought was going to be possible for him here. And at this point, you know, I said this the other day, I think, the challenge for him for next year is going to be, and you saw it today, you know, 0 for 2 from 3. He missed some other jumpers. Can he add he hasn't become a great shooter, but can he add a reliable jumper?
Mm-hmm.
Because if he can do that, then we're really talking. Because if teams have to, and as I've said, I've been surprised that teams have respected him as much as they have on the perimeter. But if he can prove to be at least a consistent threat, then everybody will have to do that, and that's going to make his game getting to the basket that much more effective, which we mm-hmm. know is where he really does damage. And it helps Michigan State, because this Michigan State team, at least, you know, we know they don't have a lot of reliable low post play. You know, you get something from Marble sometimes. Hall will occasionally chip in. Bainham might get you one or two post buckets a game, but it's not consistent production. So when you don't have that, you need to get those points in the paint other ways. Last year's team, Aaron Henry gave them that
mm-hmm.
late. They got a lot better in that area, and that's why they started winning. This team, they really need Hogard to do that. And he's got that element in his game. That's the great thing about his size, you know, that he's like 6'3", 6'4", and he's strong.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I was thinking about this today. I hate making a comparison, but I will. His game today reminded me a lot, and at different points of the season, but especially today, it really reminded me when Michigan had a kid. It probably gets forgotten because he emerged just before Trey Burke. They had a guy named Darius Morris, if you remember him, who played point guard for 2 years there. And his first year, he was terrible, just awful. And even the first half of his second season was awful. That was the year Michigan State went through the doldrums in 10-11,
mm-hmm.
where they had Kalen and Durrell and all those guys, but it never clicked, and they struggled. Michigan got their season on track by coming into the Breslin and winning. And Morris was the guy that put the team on his back down the stretch, and he did it in somewhat of a similar fashion. He was like Hogard. He was a little bigger point guard. He wasn't a great shooter, but he had a knack for getting to the rim and finishing using his size and playing under control and making others better at the same time. And it sparked that team, and in fact led him to make the decision to go pro, which left the path open for Trey Burke to take over, and they were better off.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, Morris had a really good sophomore season. And Hogard, to me, has that potential. What I'd like to see, as I've said, is develop that jumper so he's even broader in terms of the impact he can make.
Mm. And a lot of people might think that there's only so much you can do with a jump shot. But, you know, if you look at Cleaves or Walton, they got to the point where, you know, they were decent shooters. You know?
Oh, I don't. Anybody who says that is an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
That shooting. Look, there are certain things that I think are really hard to improve. I actually think a handle. By the time when you're talking guys that by the time they've gotten to college, a handle is hard to improve. Guys who don't have a great handle, it's pretty rare that they're able to go up a level or two. I think certain other things can be instinctual, like we've talked about a lot this year, reaction time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff, hard to improve that. Shooting, oh, absolutely shooting can be improved.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that everybody automatically improves as a shooter. But I can cite, I go on and on and on with examples of guys. The classic one, the biggest one by far, was Eric Snow.
Oh, by yeah. Far. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
By far. Eric Snow was the worst shooting guard I've ever seen at Michigan State early in his career. And they got him to the point that he was respectable, and that made the difference for him between being a guy who, you know, was a nice college contributor and having a long NBA career, because he was just good enough that he was playable in that phase of the game, and that allowed his athleticism, his defense, all of those things to impact games and turn him into a long-term pro.
Yeah.
So it absolutely can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see anything in Hogard that's – look, I'm not saying – A.J. Hogard can't – this is why I've seen some people compare him to Denzel Valentine, and that I don't get. I don't think it's a good comparison, because I don't think he can ever be the shooter Denzel was. But could he get to be maybe a mid-30s guy? Yeah, I believe that's within the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got to put in a lot of work, but – you know, look, this year has been a situation where he's proven that he belongs.
Yeah.
He's proven that he can play, that he can be, at times, a very effective point guard. I think he's proven he can defend at this level, certainly as an on-ball defender. Maybe it's a little more questionable off-ball, but on-ball, great at times, and good generally.
Yeah.
Great transition player, you know, creative player. As we've said, a force getting to the rim and finishing.
Mm-hmm.
Lot to like.
Yeah, and he can rebound a little bit, too.
Absolutely. Well, again, the size and, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive versatility because of his size is there, too. But if he can add a respectable shot, doesn't need to be great, just respectable, there's another level for him to get to. I mean, I expect he's going to get better anyway. But if that phase of his game can improve, man, then you might have something.
Okay. Well, the first key, defending the arc. Yeah, 8 for 24, 33% for Purdue.
Yeah, and that number obviously is good from a percentage basis, right? 33% mm-hmm. for a team that shoots almost 40.
Yeah.
You'd say, okay, that's decent job, well done. But I don't think it was good enough. And the reason I don't think it was good enough is that number of attempts. You know, that game at Breslin, they were 1 for 9. And the 24 in this game was not a result, in my view, of Purdue just heaving up contested shots. They weren't taking bad shots. They had a lot of good looks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about whether MSU would play them straight up or not. And they did at times. They certainly were not as consistent with the doubling as they were against Wisconsin. But I think particularly in the second half, they went to it more often. And at times it worked, but I think there was one sequence in the game where it was essentially lost, or you can say Purdue won it. When Michigan State got it to 1 on a Hogard basket with about, I think it was about 5 minutes to play.
Mm-hmm.
There were, I believe it was 2 consecutive possessions where Purdue got the ball in the post to Trevion Williams, and Michigan State brought doubles, and Williams beat them with passes to Eric Hunter, and Eric Hunter nailed 2 threes, and all of a sudden, in a sequence of probably about 40 seconds or so, you go from down 1 to down 7, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the ball game. And I didn't like the decision to do that, to double him. I think if you want to double Edie, that's maybe a different story.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not nearly the passer that Williams is. And, you know, maybe you can harass him into something. But against Trevion Williams, you can't double that guy. You can't do it. He's too good a passer, and he's got too many good shooters around him to really do that and think you're going to get away with it. And Michigan State ultimately didn't.
Mm.
So I was disappointed to see that, a little surprised, but, you know, obviously Izzo has made a decision here late in the season that I think he feels he needs to do at least some of that, because he doesn't have enough faith in his low post players to play straight up against good post scorers and hold them down. And I can understand that. When Joey Brunk torches you for 45 or whatever the hell he had, and Dickinson kills you, I get it. You have to, it's rational to look at it and say, and it's been all year like that, in Big Ten play at least. They've just been tortured by low post players. I mean, Harrer had big games against them. Mm-hmm. Eric Curry had career games against them from Minnesota. I mean, we're not talking about have the Walker kid for Nebraska hurt them. I mean, it was up and down the conference, right? Not just the elite guys. Coburn. So I get that you're looking at, okay, we need a different solution here. But that matchup, that guy, I don't think he can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little disappointed in that. And so even though the percentage says they didn't do a bad job, I didn't love it.
Mm-hmm. And defensive rebounding.
Well, look. This was tough. They did a really good job in the game in East Lansing. In this one, yeah, they got hammered. Purdue had 15 offensive rebounds on 32 misses, a 46.8% offensive rebounding rate, which is massive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they had problems. That's fair to say. Now, I would say on the other side, Michigan State did a better job offensive rebounding itself than I would have expected. 30.7, so about a 31% rate, which is not horrible because Purdue's a very good defensive rebounding team. But Purdue clearly, that was a major factor in this game. There's no two ways about it. That said, well, let me look at the numbers here. Yeah, here's second chance points went 22-9 in Purdue's favor.
Oof.
Now, I'm going to say this. Unlike most games this year where this kind of thing happened, I did not think this was because Michigan State was not energetic, not fighting, not tough enough. This was a game where they were playing a team that unfortunately has some big guys, and sometimes there's just nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
With MSU's personnel, I mean, if they had Antonio Smith and Andre Hudson out there, okay, that's a different story. But they don't. So knowing who they have and keeping that in mind, you know, Edie had 5 offensive rebounds. Williams had 3. So those two guys had 8 just by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And Gillis chipped in with 3. So 11 offensive rebounds from the two guys who share the 5 spot and the starting 4.
Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a whole lot. And, you know, sometimes that's just with those guys, you know, Edie had a few where I just don't think there was anything you could do.
Mm-hmm.
He's 7'4" and he can high point the ball before you ever have a chance to get to it. You know, when he's out there being guarded by Julius Marble, sometimes if the ball bounces the right way, that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Julius Marble has physically, literally has no chance. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think that was part of the story here. That's why I don't think, you know, what part of what gives me some positive feelings about their performance is I think Purdue played pretty damn well.
Mm-hmm.
They may feel like, well, we didn't have our offensive game really cooking, but Michigan State had a ton to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the rebounding numbers show you their, and the way Ivy was playing, like their effort level was off the charts. I mean, they were competing the way that looked like the way you expect a traditional Michigan State-Purdue game to look.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the game the night before looked like you expect a Michigan State-Wisconsin game to look. And that's a positive step for me because for too much of the season, the Michigan State part of those equations was not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was there in this tournament, and it was there today. They just, again, they were playing a team that has some elements that are just hard to beat if they're playing that in that engaged fashion, and they were.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a rough day on the defensive boards, no doubt about that.
Yeah, and produced.
But I don't feel as bad.
Eighth in the country, you know. I mean, it's not like they are definitely a good team.
Sure.
So the pick and roll, we talked about Walker wanting Walker to be aggressive. How did Hogard handle it?
Well, Hogard did okay in it. They did get some things out of it. They ran some lob stuff to Bingham. They did get some stuff done out of that. But what I was thinking was, and you heard Grant Hill mention it, what you want to do ideally against a Purdue team that plays, he referred to it as flat ball screen coverage, which means the big man stays back.
Mm-hmm.
He's not out hedging ultra, ultra high. He's instead kind of shacking it, as there's another term for it,
mm-hmm.
where the big man just kind of goes under and just stays in the lane, so he's not vulnerable to getting blown by. When a team plays you that way, you need a ball handler, a guy with the ball in his hands who can punish them by hitting shots, by hitting jumpers. And that's where Tyson Walker really would have a chance to do damage. But he played 3 minutes in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So we never really got a chance to see it. And that's unfortunate. AJ played a great game, but that is not what I was talking about there. Is not AJ's game. It's not in his wheelhouse. Not now. Now, again, if he can make progress as a jump shooter, maybe not even that he becomes a much, much better three-point shooter, but even if he could become more reliable with, say, 15 to 18 footers just inside the line, that would make a big difference, because then you can play that way and still have him be effective if teams are going to play off him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but with what they had to work with in this game, it just wasn't there. And that's why, you know, the Walker, just besides the minutes that Hogard had to play, the Walker injury did hurt Michigan State a lot, because they just didn't have that element anymore.
Yeah.
You know, he's the only guy they've got that's capable of doing that.
Mm-hmm. And then make threes.
Well,
28%.
You know, yeah, they got it. They didn't shoot well regardless. 7 for 25 is not good. I would also say that they hit a couple late to make that number look better than it was. For most of the day, the three-point shot was not there for Michigan State. And again, I mentioned it earlier, I think a lot of them were short, which tells me third game in 3 days, there were some problems for some guys with legs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Max Christie played a lot of minutes in this tournament. And he in particular, I thought, and he hit one or two, at least one. He hit two late, but one late, and another one in the second half. But mm-hmm. I thought it really showed up for him, and you know, for other guys too. Joey Hauser, you know, they didn't have guys really looking like they were shooting the ball the way we normally expect them to. Give Purdue some credit, but I think more of it was just a sign of Michigan State just maybe not having enough gas in the tank in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's also in addition to the fact, and give Purdue some credit for this, Purdue takes so much out of you when you're on the defensive end.
Yeah.
You've got to guard them. The physicality you have to play with, how locked in you have to be to prevent guys from getting open looks, that taxes you. And I think that probably had something to do with it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that was disappointing. You know, Michigan State, I think, lost the three-point battle, which they won decisively in Breslin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't lose it by a lot. They took one more shot. They made one fewer. So it wasn't like a huge discrepancy, but it was enough.
Yep.
I do want to say, though, once again, for the second game in a row, Michigan State won the turnover battle. This time,
yeah,
Purdue only had 9, so they played a pretty clean game. But Michigan State only committed 4 turnovers.
That might be a season low. That's got to be.
They set the season low against Wisconsin with 7.
Mm-hmm.
So back-to-back, Now, again, neither of these teams are ball-hawking teams. They don't put you under as much pressure as others will. But we also know that hasn't been the real problem MSU's faced for the bulk of this season, Maryland notwithstanding. MSU's problem has not been dealing with high-octane pressure. It's been making self-inflicted mistakes. And the last 2 days, very, very, very few. That's if you want the probably the underlying stat that tells you why they were able to stay in this game, I would argue that that turnover number was part of it, for sure. Another stat worth looking at, which I think, again, tells you a large part of the story here, is Michigan State only 6 free throw attempts. They were 3 for 6.
Yep.
Purdue 17 for 25. And I think, I don't think this was a poorly officiated game. They blew some calls. I mean, there's no doubt. There were a couple of instances. There was one where Hunter had a transition basket off a steal where he went out of bounds and then came back in to touch it as a first touch. That's automatically, that's a turnover. And they didn't call it. They let him score. But by and large, I don't have a problem with Purdue's attempts per se, because I thought they were very aggressive. I maybe Michigan State probably deserved a few more than 6, but that's a big, 17-3 at the free throw line. Hey, that's, you know, that's a big deal. And it's interesting that, again, despite it, this goes to show you that sometimes field goal attempts is a deceiving stat. Michigan State, what do they have, 12 more shots at the basket? Yeah, 12 more shots from the floor, but a lot of that is mitigated by the free throw line difference. Because, again, Purdue had an edge on the offensive boards, and while they were there was a negative margin for them in turnovers, it wasn't massive. It was 5, 9-4, so... Purdue had certainly had more chances to score than Michigan State did when you add it all up. But I do think the free throw line was a big factor as well.
Okay. Well, we won't cry over spilt milk here. They get tomorrow off. And we'll probably do a selection Sunday. Thing. That'll be fun.
Right. I think, and this year, of course, even better than last year. Last year, it was nice just to have the tournament back in any form, but
yeah,
without fans in the stands. I mean, you just look at the difference in this Big Ten tournament. Not that it's been the craziest crowd. I was actually very surprised that this game was as subdued, it seemed to me, with the crowd as it was. I expected it to be a more raucous environment for Purdue. Might have been that Indiana fans had something to do with that, but which I had forgotten. I'd not calculated that when thinking about it yesterday, but that might have had something to do with it. But
because they all left out after Indiana.
Well, that or were rooting against Purdue.
Okay.
Purdue just didn't have as much of the room.
Okay,
as I might have assumed, but I do think that. It's going to be great to have fans back in the stands and
yeah.
the sights, and it's going to be different again. It'll be back to normal. But I think what we'll do is we'll do a quick take on MSU's position tomorrow,
yeah,
and the field, and just kind of some general thoughts about that stuff. And then as we get into the week, do a more thorough preview of whomever Michigan State's opponent is. You know, I just to kind of touch on it for a minute, I do think it's going to be interesting. There was a lot of, and you just never know how this stuff goes, and it's my feeling that in recent years, like the last 6 or 7 years for sure, it's felt to me like Michigan State has come out on the negative end of where expectations were for their seeding more often than not. So I certainly don't want to get too cocky about this. I think, based on what I could see, I would like to think that winning yesterday's game did enough to get them to the 7 line. They were 8 in a lot of places heading into this tournament. But I think winning 2 games, one of them over a team that has a shot at least at being a top three seed in Wisconsin and definitely a top four. That's a, you know, that probably is enough. I don't think, when I thought about it, I don't even think winning this thing would have been enough to get them to a six.
Mm.
So I kind of felt like seven was the upside, the realistic upside. If they had lost against Maryland, we might have been talking about them as a nine or maybe even a 10. There's no way they could have gone as low as, let's say, the play-in game.
Mm-hmm.
But they could have gotten hurt here, and they didn't do that. But I just don't to feel ultra confident about not being on that eight line. I can't get there just because I feel like Michigan State, for whatever reason, has been on the short end of some very dubious calls in recent years. Last year, for example,
mm-hmm.
they shouldn't have been in the play-in game. By rights, nobody expected that.
Yeah, that was a surprise.
That was a surprise, yeah. There have been years where you look at the 2019 team. It didn't end up hurting them, but they get a two seed, which wasn't unexpected, but they got placed with Duke, who was the overall number one. That was a surprise. That wasn't expected to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like they got the shaft there. There have been a few of those. Again, you can say because they lost their first round game, you can say, well, they didn't deserve that. But the Denzel team, I think, got a three.
If I remember correctly. No, I thought they were a two, maybe.
Were they a two?
I thought maybe okay. I thought they should have been a one, I think, and they wound up being a two and got beat.
That's probably it then. They were in the mix for a one seed because they had been, even though we talked about this recently, even though they didn't win the Big Ten regular season title, Indiana won it largely due to schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And that was generally known. I don't think anybody thought that Michigan State wasn't the best team in the league. And then they went out, won the Big Ten tournament to confirm it. And I think that was right. There was a strong feeling that they were looking at a one seed. They didn't get it. There have been a few of these instances over the years where I've been really surprised by where Michigan State's ended up. So I, you know, if they pull an eight out of the hat tomorrow, it's not going to floor me. I think they did enough to get out of that scenario, but we'll see.
Mm. Okay. Well, we'll leave it here. And I guess we'll see you tomorrow after the selection Sunday. Until then, the Final Four is
much more to life than what you see, my friend.